There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back, listeners of the 45th. Rabia Chaudhry here, and I'm joined this week with Siraj Hashmi and Susan Simpson. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hey, Rabia.
How was your week? Yeah, Siraj, how was your week?
I don't know if Susan cut out. Susan, you still there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, okay. I wasn't sure if the silence was intentional.
You started laughing, and I was wondering.
No, I'm just saying, just because this week, you know, with President Trump being out of the country, it's still insane.
Mm. It's now insane in more continents.
Yeah, no, I mean, all right, I'll just say, like, before Saturday night with the Kim Jong-un subtweet.
That's not a subtweet. That's not a subtweet.
Okay, it was a subtweet in the fact that, like, he didn't at him directly, yeah. And that's why I qualify as a subtweet. But calling him basically, why would I call him short and fat? I mean, it's really funny. But like before that, he was doing really well in Japan, South Korea, and Vietnam. And then boom, this all happened. Oh, in China too. He's doing well in China. And then, of course, we'll get to the Putin meeting. But yeah.
Our president went days without embarrassing on social media. I mean, that's a big achievement.
There were a few days. I was just like, wow, how long is this going
to
keep up?
He was too busy traveling. He couldn't get to his Twitter. But here's the thing, though. I spent like 3 days in a retreat. And so I missed a whole bunch of what was happening over the last few days. And I did, when I jumped back onto Twitter just briefly the other day and I saw that Trump tweet, I was like, what happened? Like, was that in response to something? What's the backstory to that subtweet or whatever that was?
The mean girl tweet. Well, the actual backstory is that what happened is that the North Korea, you know, state spokesman or whatever, said that Trump was I forget the exact wording. It was like, he is an old lunatic that's going to start a nuclear war.
Yeah.
And of course, Trump ignores that lunatic start nuclear war.
But he focuses
on the old part.
Yeah, he was focused on the old part. He wasn't a fan of that.
Then he calls Kim Jong-un fat because, like,
short and fat.
Like, I guess he's never looked in a mirror. I don't know.
Well, he's tall and fat, but
but also, like, here's the thing. I feel confident. I feel confident somehow that the leader of North Korea is not going to be pushed into a nuclear war by being taunted by childish insults online.
Oh, wow.
So we got that going for us.
Pretty tall. Donald Trump is 6'2". He's like an inch shorter than me.
No, he's tall. He's I mean, that's
baby hands though.
Maybe he's built like a dinosaur. So it was actually in response to something. I mean, like, but where was he when he did that? Was he in Vietnam?
I think it was in China. Oh, no. I'm sorry. He sent the tweet out in Vietnam. It was in Hanoi. And then and then he went up for his news conference with the Vietnamese president.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah, it's all great.
So that was the end of the week. So we should probably go back to the start,
yeah.
Which was a
very different scene.
Well, it was like 1 year ago to the day, only this time around things went differently.
Oh, yeah.
With the elections.
Because he was in South Korea. He was in South Korea. And then I remember the South Korean president, Park, congratulated him on his 1 year anniversary. I was just like, oh God.
Yeah. Can we talk for a second though about how, like, the whole time he was in South Korea, he was tweeting, I can't wait to meet and be with President Xi.
Yeah.
Like, also, like, you're insulting South Korea because, like, you keep talking about how much you want to be in China, but the way you're talking about this guy makes it sound like it's a crush you have, and it's really kind of disturbing.
Well, we're going to talk in depth about the Asia trip, right, Siraj? You're going to lead us through that, and, you know, the little bits and pieces I caught here and there, I'm looking forward to being filled in. But you're right, Susan, you know, we kind of start, I will say this, thankfully, a week has gone by, and I believe there has been no mass shooting or anything terrible, like, you know, big kind of terror type event happened the last week, and I'm glad.
Let's be real. There's probably been tons of them, but they weren't quite big enough to make national news.
Maybe that's what it was, but I'm relieved that we don't have to discuss something like that this week after 2 weeks in a row. I want to touch on a couple of things before we get into the election, which was, God, that was like, I was just, I don't even do drugs, and I felt high that night. It felt great. but I want to start off with some good news, and that is kudos to the American people, because ACA registration, which opened up November 1st, doubled this year, doubled from last year, 1 year ago. 200,000 people re-enrolled in Obamacare. Obama still cares, is how I see it.
So it turns out that a year-long campaign to destroy Obamacare actually acted as a year-long ad for it.
There's no such thing as bad publicity, yeah, I guess.
It's just like when, you know, President Obama, during his tenure, wanted to do something about gun control and gun sales skyrocketed. It's similar to that. It's that effect.
I feel like that analogy is...
It's very similar.
I think that makes sense, yeah.
I mean, if you're gonna Trump impose... really is coming to take our health care. Obama wasn't really coming to take all the guns.
No, I know he wasn't.
But there was a perception. I think that's fair, right?
That's true.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There was the perception. And if you... I can't recall where I saw this, but people... I actually think Jimmy Kimmel did this. He actually asked people, Trump supporters, what they thought of healthcare now, and he just removed Obama and put Trump care, and Trump supporters were like all the rave for it, and literally nothing had changed to the Affordable Care Act. It's still in place. It's just if you take Obama's name out and put Trump's in, it's all of a sudden amazing.
So wait a minute, did they actually not realize it hasn't been repealed yet?
And that's a good question. I don't know if I
Trump
don't
keeps saying
know
it's gone. It's done, so they probably
know,
believe it.
I don't know if they actually know it is. I know that Trump has declared it dead or all but dead. And therefore, I think a lot of Trump supporters think, oh, it's dead. That means it's done. That means it's definitely gone, even though it hasn't been repealed and replaced.
Yeah. And, not realizing he's declared it dead since 2014.
Yeah. I mean, like the whole... You know, the whole cost-sharing reductions, that's probably where he was like, this is what it means when it's dead, is by pulling those cost-sharing reductions. And therefore, I guess all Trump supporters think it's Trump care now.
Yeah. But again, the prices are jacked up. I'm in the exchange for my healthcare, and it's definitely risen
a lot
more.
The exchange?
Yeah. I've never had an increase like this year. It was pretty brutal.
Well, again, that's probably because of the cost-sharing reductions going on. And that, you know, I mean...
Well,
that,
I think it's a general
was,
uncertainty, really. I think more so than that, just the fact they don't know what's going to happen and
actually,
they have to price that in.
Actually, that's incorrect. For me, I misspoke. The cost-sharing reductions actually aren't going because Congress is currently working on them and they actually struck a bipartisan deal. So they haven't actually fully been pulled, which is, I guess, why there's just so much confusion going on.
But
yes,
I think Susan's probably right that because of the uncertainty in the markets, insurance companies are just bumping
it
up anyways.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. I agree with Susan's point. I was just saying that I misspoke. I didn't mean to say that the cost sharing reductions are completely gone. They're probably still in place, but the market uncertainty is why they rose.
So it's not all, you know, sunshine and roses, but it's still in place. Hopefully the bipartisan pushes to get something in place to shore it up will happen.
But I think this is kind of an interesting, what you just pointed out, the phenomena of how... I mean, you made this analogy, and I'm like, you know, I wonder how that could be used, like, going forward on different issues. I'm like, oh, we should, like, maybe approach things in a different way then. And I'll
try and ban them for a while and then suddenly fail with that.
Or maybe, I don't know. But, well, okay, a couple of things that caught my eye this week is there's a new Trump working in the White House, and I actually had to look up who this Trump was. I didn't, because I don't know the names of the Trump children's spouses.
Indistinguishable backup daughter-in-law, number two.
Yep, exactly. Laura Trump. Laura Trump, apparently, who is the wife of Eric Trump, who is...
Eric Trump, yep.
Yep, number two, I think. He's younger than Don Jr., right? Is he the second?
Yeah, Don's the oldest.
Yeah. So she apparently, now she was very much part of the campaign, his election campaign, but apparently she's also been pretty busy inside the White House. She has been hosting... herself, her own high-level meetings inside the White House on a variety of domestic policy initiatives, which is really odd because she has no position in the White House. And also, you know, she was a senior advisor. I mean, like, every single one of them was a senior advisor, I guess, to his campaign. But she's had over half a dozen meetings with, like, government officials, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, Veterans Affairs Committee Phil Rowe, representatives and congressional folks. I mean, it's remarkable. And they're all, they're mostly about, like, this pet project that's all about something that she's got a vested interest in, which I'm not saying the project itself has an issue. It has to do with getting funding to provide more therapy dogs
for the VA.
Well, yeah, exactly, for the VA. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that, but
that's some low-level staffers who's dedicated to the big team gets a side project. They might do that. This is not some bring your daughter-in-law to be like a liaison in the White House for some.
Yeah,
this is weird.
I mean, like,
nepotistic. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to compare Ivanka and Lara Trump, I mean, Ivanka obviously has way more responsibilities and I think has a closer ear to the president. You should probably watch her more closely than what Lara is doing.
And
Jared. I feel like, and well, obviously Jared, but I'm just saying, oh yeah, I mean, she's an in-law too. She's married into the family. It's actually pretty interesting. Eric and Don Jr. don't really have that close of an ear to the president at all. I always find that interesting. They don't advise him on anything. It's because all coming from
the whole idea when he came into office that he would have this wall separation and he'd have no contact with them because
the story in the pipeline down the pipeline is that Don Jr. told his father to not bring Ivanka into the White House and
sibling dynamics
and basically he was excommunicated from the White House. I mean, I'm sure they still love each other, but when it comes to like the politics of it, you know, at least my sources have told me that that's kind of what's going on.
Also, Don Jr. keeps saying really dumbass shit. Like, Eric is like gets portrayed as a dumb one, which is unfair to Eric because he stays quiet. And Don Jr. is out there saying all kinds of crazy shit
every now and then.
Yeah, but he doesn't say as like outrageously, like aggressively stupid stuff as Don Jr. does.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, look, it's not just Laura, though. Her brother also recently has gotten appointed by the administration. His name is Kyle Unisaka. He's been named Chief of Staff of the Energy Department's Office of Energy Policy. Apparently a position he is completely unqualified for. Now, I mean, this is like an ongoing pattern of nepotism where he keeps appointing people, you know, I mean, he keeps pulling all his... This is a family business. This administration is a family business. At the same time, he's completely purging the government of like actual experts and professionals who have been, you know, part of government for decades. You know, right now, like there's reports that, you know, Betsy DeVos has shrunk the education department. She got rid of 350 workers in the last year. And she's apparently trying to get rid of another 255 employees. 255. That's over 500 employees, you know, almost 600 from the education department.
But nothing compares what Tillerson's doing to dismantle the State Department.
Oh, yeah. At State, there's apparently 60% of career ambassadors have left the State Department. Now, on their own or have been asked to leave. And those are you know, career ambassadors. That's not even the staff, right? So, like, we've talked before about how entire floors are absent. One of my friends who I've mentioned a couple times is somebody who's at State, has been at State a long time, was a source in a couple of things. He's like, I'm out. He just left. USAID. Oh, wow. Yeah. USAID sent letters to 70 foreign service job applicants saying the position had been canceled. So, you know, they're basically, and this reminds me of what Trump said the week before. He said, like, I'm the only one that matters.
No, I'm trying to remember. Is the hiring freeze still in place in the federal government?
Not the way it was initially implemented.
Yeah.
No, well, that was causing big problems.
I feel like
now offering buyouts to State Department.
Right. Well, I feel like President Trump has appointed people that, you know, who honestly hate the agencies that they run. And so that the reason why he appointed them is because he's trying, these particular cabinet members are trying to reshape it in their own image. And a lot of it because they're, some of them are actually conservative. They're not like Trumpian conservative, but actually conservative. They're thinking about actually shrinking the size of government. I don't know the exact details on what jobs and positions that were cut from the education department. It is my hope, obviously, that if there were actually, you know, like extraneous positions in the education department, that they were cut for good reason.
Nearly 600. I mean, I've also heard reports that she might be stepping down. I don't know what that's about.
Really? What? Who reported that?
Oh, it was reported a number of different times this past week. Like I saw it run two or three times.
I completely missed that.
Over a couple different days that Betsy DeVos is, apparently there is talk that she is thinking about stepping down, but before the end of this year, which would, you know, she's taken 600 people with her. But
I mean, Tom Price resigned, and I don't think anybody saw him as being the first domino to fall from the cabinet.
He was sacrificial lamb. He was by far not the only one who was abusing like private jets. It's just
In Betsy DeVos's case, she was flying her own private jet. She wasn't flying on the taxpayer dime.
It's concerning that there's that many billionaires in the cabinet, but
if she's using taxpayer money,
if I had my own plan, I'd use it too. Let's be real.
And, you know, I know that obviously the if you're a cabinet member, you can either fly commercial or fly private jet, and it's taxpayer funded regardless. It's just the optics look terrible when you fly on the private jet and use it on the taxpayer dime.
And there, it's real money that adds up. Like, it's, we're not talking like, you know, just something that makes a good soundbite. This is like millions of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So guys, holidays are right around the corner, and a lot of people have their favorite holiday traditions. I got, and I think Susan, you also got a chance to get that tradition started early this year. We got some gift baskets from Harry and David this week.
Yes, I had one. I may not have it anymore, but
what was in yours?
Well, you guys are talking about Harry and David, the gift baskets, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, those are the best.
Mm-hmm. You ever had one?
I did. I actually, that's like my go-to gift. I like, no joke, I give that to like everybody that I like sort of know and want to know better. That's usually my way in.
Well, that's good to know.
Like, you're not going to go wrong with it. And I don't want to choose favorites, but like that, the popcorn chocolate stuff they had, it was pretty good.
I like their lox. They got like dried salmon. It's money.
They have dried salmon?
They had everything in mine. They have pears, which are great and delicious and
yes,
healthy, and also chocolate things that I loved.
I'm a big fan of the caramel popcorn.
Yes.
That's usually my go-to right away.
So let me tell you what happened in my house with the caramel popcorn. So my family gathered around the basket and was starting opening it and opened all the boxes and was like, where's this from? Who's it from? I was like, don't touch a thing. This is mine. And then I gave explicit permission for my husband to open up the popcorn. I swear to God, I come back a couple hours later, it was gone. I had none of it.
Never trust a man around that popcorn.
I know. It's good stuff.
So I understand there's a deal going on for the holidays. Is that right?
That's right. Because Harry and Dave is offering our listeners 20% off their holiday purchase. That's 20% off all of their Thanksgiving and Christmas gifts and goodies that the lucky people on your list can handle. So Raj, you said you already give the Harry and David as gifts. There you go. 20% off.
Oh, yeah. I've been doing it for years. Hot dang. I mean, like, now that I can get a discount off of it, and if I listen to the podcast... Which I could.
And you're on the podcast.
Not do because I'm part of it. If I could get 20% off, that'd be, I mean, I'm sold.
Let me tell you how to do it. This is how you do it. To get 20% off select holiday favorites now, just go to harryanddavid.com, click on the radio icon, and enter the code 45. That's harryanddavid.com. Get that delicious popcorn that I never got to taste. Click on the radio icon and enter the code 45 for 20% off. Do it now. The holidays are around the corner. It's going to get busier. You're not going to have time later. And you better hurry because the offer ends this week on Friday. All right, guys. Get your Harry and David on.
Yeah, and also don't forget Harry and David is part of the 1-800-Flowers family of brands because that saved me so much time when I gotta give my mom flowers for Mother's Day.
You can package it together, right?
It's true. You could also, you know, celebrate Mother's Day, you know, a few months later and make up for it by getting her that Harry and David gift basket.
To jump ahead or jump back now, we had the election last Tuesday, and I know it was what Virginia, obviously. There were some in Florida and New Jersey were the big ones,
yeah,
and then some others. And New Hampshire had a big one.
I don't know. New Hampshire, New York had their mayoral election, and they also had their city council elections,
yeah. But the end result was that Democrats didn't just sweep, they swept bigger than anyone thought they could have. It was a very striking and I think significant win. And for the first time, probably in a year, I kind of was like, I don't call it hope, but it was like, I mean, there have been times this past year I just wanted to mentally throw it all in. I think America's been damaged so badly. It's really tiring to think of how the rest of my life is going to be us trying to climb back from this hole we threw ourselves into.
Let me give a little bit of details about the different wins across the country. So, you know, the governor's seats, New Jersey and Virginia, are blue now. In Virginia, this was interesting to me, 15 legislative seats inside the state house are now blue. And one of the things that was incredibly heartening to me, as we've witnessed like just tremendous amounts of racism, bigotry, xenophobia, all kinds of stuff in the last year, is that it just seems like there was a real pushback to that kind of stuff. I mean, there's some history was made in some of the races.
Danica Rome in Manassas, Virginia, that was huge. Her being the first transgender member of a state legislature, that's big.
Yeah, and it's not just big because she's the first transgender, openly transgender legislator, but also because she defeated this guy, Bob Marshall, who was a outspoken opponent of the transgender rights, and he's the one who introduced that bathroom bill.
He called himself, he self-described himself as the chief homophobe.
He did, and you know what? He refused to address her by name. He said he wouldn't debate her. I mean, he was so incredibly, horribly disrespectful to her during this, and she beat him. And then you have a New Jersey politician, Carmen, who actually joked back during when the Women's March took place that he asked if it would be over in time for them to cook dinner. Well, he's so pissed off this woman named Ashley Bennett that she's a 32-year-old woman, never been in politics before, ran for the first time, beat him.
It's great. I'm not really a Republican. I mean, I do probably lean more to the right, but what I was just going to say is that it's actually pretty refreshing to see all of these like bigots and misogynists and homophobes and transphobes get voted out of office because
attacking.
If you tout yourself as like a moral conservative and you accept being with all people or like associating yourself with all these different types of people, just the way they carry about themselves just completely is a stain on conservatives and on Republicans. And most people aren't like that. And so it's actually good to like get people who, you know, think like that out of office to let them know that that behavior is not acceptable.
That there's limits to that. You know, so Tuesday night as these results were coming in, Susan, I kept thinking about you, specifically you, because I mean, your concern over our democracy and how much damage has been done. I mean, like, you know, you've repeated it many times on this podcast. And I wonder how, do you feel better about it? Do you feel like, you know, there's hope 2018, 2020? Do you think, I'm like, okay, Trump's out of the country. We're just taking it back while he's gone. I mean, did you feel a little bit better? Do you feel like a little more secure?
I did, but I didn't want to either. Because this doesn't fix it alone. I don't know how I feel. It's complicated, but yeah, it gave me a reason to not give up so fast on the U.S., I guess. Like, it's you know what? Like, we fucked up terribly. There are consequences forever, but this is not who all of us are. In fact, most of us are not in favor of what's happening right now. And maybe 20 years from now, this will be like this embarrassing time we went through, but not an active impediment on our ability to function as a country.
Yeah. There's all these other historic wins. I mean, all these mayoral campaigns. I can't think, there's a mayor in Montana. In Hoboken has his first Sikh mayor. There are a couple.
Oh yeah, that was, I remember that.
Ravi Bala, a couple different other states got their first black mayors ever. And the one, I can't remember who, it was a black woman, female mayor. So I think these are, you know, these are
and
statements.
Then Justin Fairfax in Virginia, was he the first black lieutenant governor?
Yes, which was fantastic.
And also Jennifer Carol Foy. Mm. Have you heard that story?
No, that's amazing.
Say more.
She's a state, Virginia, and she announced that she was going to be running. And after she announced, she found out she was pregnant with twins. And she's a defense attorney, pretty cool background. And they are very premature. So while she was like on bed rest before that, like her husband was out knocking on doors for her, and they've been in the NICU every night.
Oh wow!
And she won.
That's wonderful.
That's amazing. That's incredible.
Yeah, and she seems really hardcore. I would not want to go against her.
Another very, very exciting win for me, because we've been watching this and we've spoken to Larry Krasner on our other podcast, Undisclosed, is the new DA of Philadelphia, yes. Larry Krasner. And the reason this is a big, big deal is this guy has been a criminal justice and civil rights attorney for 3 decades. He has sued the Philadelphia Police Department 75 times. He is now the lead prosecutor in Philadelphia, a city that has a very long history of really, really bad stuff in the criminal justice system. I've heard that there are prosecutors in the office and police officers who said before the election, if this guy wins, we're out, we're quitting. I don't know what's going to happen there, but he is really going to clean house. And, Susan, I don't know if something like this has happened in any other major city where the top prosecutor is somebody who comes from a background of defense work.
I can't, maybe it's happened, but I can't recall it.
Yeah.
But the way the police reacted was pretty, I guess, predictable, but yeah.
It shouldn't be. Not if they really believe. I mean, they're all on the side of truth and justice. If they're going to be shady, then yeah, they should be scared. So anyway, so what do you think about this going forward, Suraj? do you think this kind of is a predictor for 2018? I mean, I know at this point, like, 2 dozen House Republicans have said they're not running again, mm-hmm. and apparently more announcements are going to be made.
Yeah,
so what
know,
do you think it's going to look like?
I mean, just in this past week, Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Bob Gillette, announced that he's retiring. And initially, I thought it was because of, you know, what we saw on Tuesday with the elections. But actually, he's actually run out of chairmanship. So, like, after this term, he can no longer actually be the highest he could be is just like a high ranking member. He can't be a chairman. And then Lamar Smith is another guy who's retiring. And that was a few weeks ago, though. I actually spoke with one member of Congress, Virginia Fox from North Carolina, like the day after the election. And she was telling me that it was not comparable, at least the elections in the Virginia House of Delegates with the 2018 midterms, because, you know, of course, like, Virginia is, you know, more, I wouldn't say a blue state through and through, but, like, they've become more blue, at least in the last 10 years. One thing I will say, though, and this is actually would be very interesting, is that the Democrats actually have a chance to retake the House but lose the Senate next year. And that's huge, because you think of how many seats are up for re-election. More Democrats are up for re-election than the Senate. Than Republicans, so it's actually very easy for Republicans to try to keep their majority, but in the House.
But look at all the retirements.
No, but not in the Senate.
In the Senate too, there's some.
Who in the Senate? Besides Jeff Flake and Bob Corker. Bob Corker, Marsha Blackburn's running in Tennessee. She's not going to lose. Jeff Flake might be the only. I mean, Arizona might be the only seat where a Democrat could possibly win, but.
I don't think it's that likely because it is Arizona
after all. What other retirements am I forgetting? Are those the only two retirements?
There were some more announced and more articles hinting that more coming down the pipeline.
I'm sure more are coming down the pipeline. But in terms of there are 24 seats by the Democrats that are up for re-election versus 10 that are up for the Republicans. And that was at least before the retirements of Bob Corker and Jeff Flake. So even then, it's 24 and 12. I mean, the odds are not favoring the Democrats in the Senate. They certainly are in the House because, you know, those local elections, you know, people are going to come out
Orrin
in droves.
Orrin Hatch.
Orrin Hatch hasn't actually announced that he's retiring.
He didn't? I thought he did.
There are rumors that he might retire. He hasn't actually said he's going to retire.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, I will say this. Look, if the Dems take back the House, I just see... You know, I'm hoping, fingers crossed, for an impeachment process to begin there. But moving, you know, to the Senate, let's talk a little bit about Mr. Moore here then.
Mm. Oh,
the Senate race.
So if you haven't, if you've not been following the news, Washington Post came out with a story this week about how, in the course of reporting on the election, they found or heard rumors and heard stories about women, now mostly, you know, middle-aged and older, who said that when they were teenagers, they had encounters with Roy Moore, who was then, I think, assistant DA for the county.
Yeah, he was assistant district attorney, or deputy district attorney. That was
deputy.
Yeah. And he's running for Senate seat. Yep.
He's running for the Senate seat vacated by Jeff Sessions. And he's the one who won in the primary, and Trump got mad and deleted all his tweets supporting his opponent. Anyway, so when he was 32 in his 30s, he was single, and he was dating a bunch of teenagers, including a 14-year-old girl.
Yeah, I mean...
And they got four people to come on the record. It's a well-sourced... It's a pretty,
Yeah, there are, 30 sources. There are, 30 sources on this confirming that, Roy Moore did that. Yeah, he dated teenagers.
You know some attorney was like, I want more. I want more. They kept going, and they got... I mean... This is well shown.
Yeah, and and if you look at how Roy Moore has handled his defense, he's not doing a good job. I mean, he's for a lawyer, he's even melting under Sean Hannity. In his radio interview from Friday, it went from, I never met these people to I dated people that young, but I don't think it was 14.
No, he said he did not generally.
Yeah, I was not generally within my behavior that.
All right,
I dated.
Siraj,
yeah,
what's up? Do you ever date middle schoolers?
Full disclaimer, I'm 30 years old. I think it's even creepy to date someone as young as someone who graduated from college, they're 22. That's weird. For someone to date, someone in their teens, that is just, there's something wrong.
But illegal. Wait, I need
I mean,
not
normally illegal.
About,
I mean,
this,
like,
this is,
if the
what happened
with
a 14-year-old is not dating. Okay, let's make that clear. That was not dating. What he did with, I'm not going to talk about the 16, 17, 18-year-old girls right now. I'm talking about the 14-year-old girl. That particular incident. This guy was a, he preyed on her. She's sitting outside a courtroom. Number one, there for a custody hearing. Number two, tells his mother, I will watch your child, okay?
Yeah.
That's what this is about. That mother wouldn't even leave her child. She left her child in the hands of a lawyer. So he knows exactly, and then he basically just preyed on her. You know, he picked her up, took her to the woods. I mean, that was not he wasn't dating her. Okay, so
no, I understand. I didn't mean to
so
say
let's make
dating,
that clear. I mean, like, you know, the age of consent in Alabama then, and I think even now is 16. He knew what he was doing
16,
was wrong.
Yeah.
Statute of limitations is run on that, so you know, there's nothing that could be done legally, I guess. But you're saying that
and it also further proves the point that she has nothing to gain from this.
She has nothing to gain. She's a lifetime Republican. But here's the thing. I mean, I don't know. His response is sucky because he's going from, oh, it's all lies to so what? But the response of his base is like, here's $100,000 more, plus more evangelicals will say they'll support him. And all these other folks in Alabama GOP circles are like, I'd still vote for him. I don't care.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Like the response is it's fake news. And also what's wrong with dating a 14-year-old.
Yes. Yeah. No, Mary. I mean, they went biblical on this, right?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That was the worst thing.
Just tell you for a second, my colleague, Phil Wegman at the Examiner, he got that scoop.
Oh, he did. Oh.
Yeah. The one where he's comparing the Alabama state auditor, Jeff Ziegler, is comparing Roy Moore's affairs with young women, like 14 to 18 years old, to that of Joseph and Mary. And what was so great about it, and I need to pull up this quote because it was just so good.
He said Mary. He's like, Joseph and Mary, this is not like Romeo and Juliet. We don't know how old Mary was.
Right.
Like,
and he also said that both Joseph and Mary became the parents of Jesus. Like, I mean, if you're a devout Christian, you know that's not true because of the Immaculate Conception and the Virgin.
He's like destroying the entire theological basis of Christianity, basically.
Exactly. Like,
as someone who grew up in Georgia, like,
yeah, it's just
like the idea that, like, well, how the hell could you possibly get that part wrong? Like, that it's insane. Like, I have to believe he actually does know. Maybe I'm totally off here, but Jesus Christ, he had to have known the real story if you asked him normally. But he was so desperate and so reaching. I don't even know that. That's just like the idea that someone would. I mean, I'm not Christian, but I was raised Christian, and I can't imagine any circumstance in which I would like flub up and be like, "Joseph is Jesus' father."
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I mean, people of other faiths, you know, who aren't even Christian, they know that.
I know that's that.
Not just, yeah, you, Robbie, you and I know that.
We know that. That's
Like, does he? It's like secretly in his head, does he think the story of Jesus? It was like a cover story for an unmarried couple, and he like slipped and gave away what he really thought.
Man, I have no idea. But either way, the defense is terrible.
It was bad.
And I've seen people like Dinesh D'Souza, who's like completely like gone insane, being like, you know,
well, what did D'Souza say?
He basically was you know, I wasn't a fan of Roy Moore before the Washington Post story, but now like,
I
really want him to be the senator from Alabama to own the liberals.
And Hannity is loving him too.
His defense was, I always had their mother's permission. If you're 32 and you have to get the mother's permission, it's wrong.
I mean, I'm 2 years younger than when Roy Moore was when he reportedly did that. And I think that's just like, why? Like, that never even crosses my mind.
He was a predator. He was a predator who wanted, like, his colleague came forward and was like, everyone knew he dated teenagers. Like, he hung out at the mall, hung out with them at the high school games. And then, of course, Breitbart's now in a campaign to try and discredit the woman.
Oh, and this is great. Did you see the Breitbart story saying it basically was confirming what the Washington Post was saying?
they were trying to discredit,
and they were basically saying, like,
they rediscovered reporting.
Well, what was so crazy is that Leah Korfman, who was the 14-year-old reported in the story, did not come forward. She had to be convinced by the Washington Post reporters to go on the record and basically state what happened to her. And that shows you that it's not a political hit job. It's that this was actually like thorough reporting being done by the Washington Post, as opposed to, you know, Breitbart trying to say that it's all political witch hunt, which I don't believe it is.
She didn't want to come forward because she knew exactly what would happen.
Yeah.
And it sounds like Washington Post was like, that's going to happen.
It's why so many other victims don't come forward, is because they know that they're going to be scrutinized and discredited. And I need to share this. This is just too ridiculous. Basically, Donald Trump Jr. liked a tweet in which Donald Trump Jr. said he liked a tweet saying someone with multiple divorces and three bankruptcies was incredible. Let that sink in.
Like, keep it rolling. She had a bit more.
She had three divorces and three bankruptcies. And
like, Donnie boy, your logic here.
Does he not know who his father is? I don't like connecting the dots here, but like, I mean, it seems so obvious, but like, dude.
Yeah.
Speaking of his father,
now there's been a little bit of a split in the administration's response. You have Pence, who said if these allegations are true, he should step down. You've had some other GOP leadership has said the same. Has Paul Ryan said anything about this?
No, of course not.
He's just like tax cuts.
Yeah, you know.
This is like focused on tax cuts.
he would be like, if Paul Ryan was forced to go on the record with this, what he'd say is, I have heard about some disturbing things in Alabama, and that's why we need tax cuts.
I feel like in like the apocalyptic wasteland of Washington, D.C., Paul Ryan will just be walking around in like a tattered suit still preaching tax reform.
I think you're right. But the president did respond to these allegations, right? He did. And I don't think publicly. It was what Pence said.
I mean, the White House said
he didn't watch TV. No, Trump said he doesn't know about it because he doesn't watch much TV.
Obviously, that's a lie because he has a TiVo. But I don't know if he has a TiVo on Air Force One or if he brings his TiVo everywhere with him.
I thought I had seen the report saying that he hopes that more wins and like after these allegations came out. But maybe I'm mistaken because, like I said, this past few days has been a blur. Okay, so let's move on. But, you know, the last poll I saw was that Moore still up. He's still up like 2 to 3 points.
He was up like 10 in one poll. It just came out. It's hard to say where it's going. It's so much chaos right now. It's probably not going to stabilize for a bit.
I mean, I just imagine Moore winning the election and then the Republicans then having to work with him in the Senate. I mean,
Gianforte won, and he assaulted or he body slammed a reporter who asked him a question.
Yeah, so, no, I know that. I'm like, but you know, they're kind of gradients here. Like body slamming a reporter is one thing, and it's horrific. But to do what Roy Moore did, like that's just on a whole other echelon of like sick, deranged behavior.
We can't forget that there are allegations that Trump might have raped a 13-year-old girl, and then he routinely walked like through pageants with these young underage girls, and they're half dressed or not dressed at all. I mean, like
Trump
so
don't need allegations. He's on the record saying he did that. Like that, we know he did that.
Right, right.
Like he went and like looked at underage girls, and he said, "Well, that's what you do when you're the owner. You get to do that." So we know he did it.
We know the answer to what will the GOP do? They'll just work with
nothing. Yeah, no.
Well, I don't know McConnell. So I don't trust this because it's McConnell. But the reports do seem to suggest that McConnell's kind of like one said he was willing to lose the seat rather than the seat Moore. And I'm sure part of it's that he doesn't like Moore at all. But that's a really strong thing to come from McConnell. I wouldn't be
surprised if McConnell is the main person who is basically sending out his people to tell Moore to drop out of the race or to, you know, even campaign against him to get a write-in candidate because McConnell wants to keep his power, and I think Roy Moore is the biggest threat to that.
I mean, Roy Moore's a threat to Republicans, too.
He's a threat to Republicans. He's a threat to Mitch McConnell's power, and if you elect Roy Moore, think about the backlash that's going to happen. Democrats are going to take control of the Senate if that happens. Then Mitch McConnell loses his power, becomes minority leader, not majority leader. And he has...
When is the election? The election's at the end of this month, right?
It's in December.
It's December. Sometimes.
It's in December. It's like a week and a half. I don't see him stepping down unless these allegations are followed by more. And usually,
there's always more.
There's always more. And so let's see how this unfolds, and we will keep an eye on it. But speaking of chaos, which you mentioned briefly a minute ago, let's move to Asia and our president. He has been traveling. Where in the world is Waldo? Siraj,
sure,
you want to lead us on this?
I'll take this one. So he first started off traveling to Hawaii, went to the Pearl Harbor Memorial, and then so he's in Hawaii, and then last Sunday, November 5th, he was in Japan, and he met with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. He golfed with Hideki Hatsumaya, professional golfer. One thing that really struck me as odd during this is that instead of having like traditional Japanese food, President Trump was pictured having, I think it was a Kobe beef hamburger. So like it's still Japanese, but still American, and I was like, why would you do that? in Japan of all places, and he can go get the authentic food. That was the most controversial thing he did in Japan. So moving past that, he was in Korea, met with President Moon. I said President Park before. I just remembered she got impeached, and yeah, President yeah. President Moon was the one who was congratulating Trump on his 1 year
not,
election.
Like, in a cult and being ordered to do things by a shadowy cult.
Yeah, and then and Trump spoke in front of the National Assembly, the Korean Parliament, and he gave this really powerful speech. Fighting against.
He gave him a Korean history.
It was
lesson.
A terrible speech, Siraj. Come on, it was a Wikipedia
Stephen
page.
Stephen Miller wrote it. Let's be real.
It was a Wikipedia page.
Okay, guys, for Trump. Okay. I'm not saying it's an objectively.
For a kindergartner, it was really powerful. I'll give you that.
It's not an objectively powerful speech. I'm just saying, for Trump to do what he did. That's good for.
He stayed on message.
He stayed on message, and that's what you need.
He really perked up when he was talking about the golf, the golfing and stuff. Yeah. I mean, that was. Yeah.
And then he was, he had that. He hit up China, and I'm trying to remember anything controversial that happened there. I know they went to the Forbidden City, and they did a classical Chinese opera there. And what was really funny was just I think the Daily Show were riffing on him. Basically the bored sleepy look on his face is that's the part when the Trevor Noah was joking that's the part when they told him that Jackie Chan wasn't going to be in this and I lost it and then he went to Vietnam.
I want to know if he had chicken nuggets when he was in the Forbidden City. I know they were supposed to have this really amazing kind of stately dinner. I really really want to see a food diary of this entire trip. You started off by talking about the burger, and I've been thinking about that what has he been eating, because I know
apparently he asked the White House chefs to recreate a double pounder with
that's
cheese.
That's awesome.
I know. But it's that and the Coke button. I'm like, dude,
I mean,
sometimes
honestly,
you are right.
I really want
a double pounder
I
now.
I mean, guys, if all the things that I would want to become president over, it's honestly just for the food.
The Coke button.
It's just for the food. That's it.
No, Coke button, 2 scoops of ice cream, and fancy ass McDonald's hamburgers.
I mean, that'd be good too. So anyways,
wait, we can't move on from China. Hold on. You said nothing controversial happened.
His messaging. Come on, hold on. Let me get to.
All right, you're gonna get to it. All right.
So he met with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
They ran into each other.
They ran into each other in China.
Accidentally, when he happened to ban all the photographers.
And the most controversial thing that happened from there was, basically, Putin, continued his denial of Russia meddling in the election, and.
So back up. You got back up in here. Because Trump came back after this meeting. He had 3 meetings during the day, apparently, that no photographers were allowed at, no American photographers were allowed at. And he says that, oh yeah, I asked Putin about the meddling, and he said no. And there's only so many times you can ask him, and I really believe that he believed that nothing happened.
Yeah.
Putin denied. The Russia spokespeople denied they ever discussed the election.
Ooh.
Interesting. That was a detail I did not hear.
Yeah, so according to Trump, then the little encounters, he's like, are you sure you didn't interfere with the election? No, Donald, we did not.
he's so concerned about it.
But yeah, no. I forget who it was. It was, I don't think it was Lavrov, but one of the big mucky mucks gave a statement and said, no, the topic did not come up in their discussions.
Interesting. I did not hear that. Anyways, but it just further goes, obviously, to the point that Trump does not trust the intelligence agencies in the United States. Despite, I think, him even saying that he trusts the intelligence agencies in the United States shortly after saying that he trusts Putin's denial that Russia meddled in the election.
He said he trusted Putin's denial. He said, the quote is, he said he didn't meddle. You can only ask him so many times. He did not do what they're saying he did. Every time he sees me, he says, I didn't do that. And I really believe that when he tells me that, he means it. But he says, I didn't do that. Oh, I think he's very insulted by it, which is not a good thing for our country.
It's just it's completely unprovoked.
And he also tweeted some love, right? He tweeted some love too, right?
I missed the best part of the quote. When Trump was asked if he believes Putin's denials, Trump said, I think that he is very, very strong in the fact that he didn't do it.
I mean.
What does that even mean?
And then he goes on to attack Americans. And he says about, the former IC heads. Mostly Comey, Clapper, and Brennan. They're political hacks, Trump told reporters aboard Air Force One. I mean, you have Brennan, you have Clapper, you have Comey. Comey is proven now to be a liar, and he's proven to be a leaker.
Yeah, I think that he's trying to hinge on his testimony in front of the Senate. Was it the Judiciary or the Intelligence Committee? Anyways, it's some Senate hearing back in June. And I think he's pinging his him being a liar on that testimony, saying that. I'm trying to remember the exact details, but I remember, obviously, him leaking the memo. He's trying to use that attack. Anyways, it does, God. That, I mean, like, everything beforehand was, like, on script, and now everything's just unraveling.
Look, he can only keep it together so long. He was really good on the trip for a couple days, and he had to blow up.
Yeah.
So, Susan, wait a minute. I want to know what the Russian media is reporting was discussed, then. If they're saying this was not discussed,
it's private. What do we... It's between heads of state. They just said, you know, they had normal, absolutely not collusion discussions.
It's the pee-pee tape, isn't it? It's the pee-pee tape. So we have no information at all as
they discussed Syria. Syria is what, like, the official line is. And, of course, That's the official line. They probably did. It's not, like, a lie, but I'm sure there was other stuff discussed, too.
You know, somebody tweeted something. Well, I know Trump later tweeted some love for Putin, said, you know, we need him, North Korea, blah, blah, blah.
I have the tweet here. It was a... When will all the haters and fools out there realize that having a good relationship with Russia is a good thing, not a bad thing? They're, T-H-E-R-E, always playing politics, bad for our country. I want to solve North Korea, Syria, Ukraine, terrorism, and Russia can help greatly. We should have started this whole damn episode with the fact that our foreign policy just, like, doubled in size as a nation, because we now have 280 characters.
No, that's right. That's we totally forgot about that. Twitter ruined Twitter. But somebody did tweet something interesting, and they said, what if all of this, like, bravado, all this, you know, this smack talk with North Korea is just, like, a ploy, that there's really, he's trying to create something so that, an issue, so that Putin can sweep in and save us, and then he can be like, see, this is why we need Russia. And I thought, that's interesting, maybe. I mean, that could be possible.
How can Russia possibly save us from a nuclear holocaust?
I don't know. Russia could be like, well, I spoke to him, and I smoothed things out. Now, Susan, I'm not going to say that by physically just looking at you versus me, you can tell which one of us really loves food. But yes, I love food and I love everything. I love food porn. I love everything about food. I love beautiful pictures of food. I like to think about food and write about food and read about food, which is why I love Bon Appetit magazine. And Susan, we talked about Bon Appetit before, but Suraj, are you familiar with this beautiful magazine?
Please enlighten me because I want to learn more.
All right. See, Bon Appetit has been around for a long time. They were around way before Instagram and Pinterest and all these people who popped up later. They have been capturing beautiful photographs of food and sharing recipes and the culture. And it's a travel magazine and all these different, you know, things in this magazine for decades now. And it's packed with recipes, trends. It is a global magazine and it's beautifully produced. Like, the photography is gorgeous. The colors are gorgeous. It's a great resource for cooks at all levels. And you don't have to be a master chef. You can be somebody who's just starting. And it's also a great gift for people who love food, like people like me. Or maybe people like you know in your life, Susan. And don't get it for Susan, though, apparently. No, actually, she probably needs it. Do you cook, Suraj, by the way?
You know, being in the news business, I haven't had as much time to cook. But when I do, I really do love to cook.
Are either one of you going to cook any holiday meals?
Not for Thanksgiving, because I'll be out of the country. But for Christmas, I might try to partake and maybe bake something. But if I have a recipe that I want to cook, like, for dinner or for a meal, I'll definitely do it.
Well, you can do it from Bon Appetit. And I know one of the most stressful parts of the holidays is trying to figure out, like, what to cook and cooking. I mean, like, that's the thing that stresses people out the most, is creating those meals. And Bon Appetit is the perfect resource to have as you are planning what those meals are going to be. So the best part of all of this is that right now, you know, their regular price is $15 for a year, which actually is nothing. But for a limited time, you're going to save $5 on a one-year subscription, plus get an exclusive Bon Appetit tote bag. It's $10, just $10 for a subscription. So think about this. I mean, like, you can get it for yourself, but for $10, you can give a wonderful gift that lasts all year.
So who's going to gift me that?
Do I want to spend $10 on Suraj? I have to think about that. I might just give that to you. You can WhatsApp me your address. WhatsApp me your address. And by the way, folks, if you know somebody who has a sweet tooth or is a chocolate lover, they have this wonderful Bon Appetit box offer where you get 1 year subscription plus a Bon Appetit gift box that's packed with goodies like chocolates, an exclusive chocolate chip toffee recipe from their test kitchen, a Jacques Pepin spatula, and that tote. So use promo code for our listeners for a special discount and start shopping now at bonappetit.com/getBA. Once again, promo code is 45, but you got to go to bonappetit.com/getBA. We didn't talk about China, and I do want to talk a little bit about, like, the message that he gave in China. First of all, I was amazed at the photographs that I saw. He loved it. He was surrounded by adoring children and just people waving and smiling and so happy to see Trump. Of course, no protesters. He saw none of it. They existed. You know, I mean, Korea, there was massive protests against Trump and none of that. I don't know if you ever actually got to see any of that. China,
I did not see it. I mean, it didn't surface in the media that at least I was seeing.
Yeah, but you know, he was given a very grand welcome by President Xi, and I feel like some of these folks really know how to work Trump, and I think he worked Trump really well.
All the dictators know how to do it.
They know how to do it, and you know what? Trump responded exactly how they wanted. He was just like, you know, there's no more currency manipulation talk. There was no more, you know, our country's being raped. Yeah, he's like, you're a great guy. You're a strong leader. People love you, and we're all good. And really, it's America's fault.
So this is worth pointing out here. Trump's understanding of the world and trade is based on a very fundamental, basic misunderstanding that is going to have disastrous consequences, and that he thinks a trade deficit means you're losing money to another country. Like, he truly believes that when there's a trade deficit, that means we lost, like, in like the point keeping or whatever, like the score on the board in the football game. Trade deficit means, like, America lost, someone else won. Like, not understanding that that's not remotely what those numbers represent. Yeah.
Yeah.
And today he accused past administrations of not knowing or caring about trade like he does.
Yeah, I think what was the most concerning thing about him being in China was that, I think he tweeted this back this past week. He says, I don't blame China. I blame the incompetence of past administrations for allowing China to take advantage of the U.S. on trade, leading up to a point where the U.S. is losing hundreds of billions of dollars. How can you blame China for taking advantage of people that had no clue? I would have done same. Exclamation point.
Well, I mean, it's true, and like no one doubts that. But yeah. So I was pretty shocked when
I heard that. But it was just, I mean, like, it's just like a complete tonal shift from, you know, China's raping us. His entire campaign is actually at no fault.
And remember how he used to say China? Did he actually correct that? China.
So I thought the exact same thing, and I was going through some of my old notes and like did like a search in my files to see what's coming up, and I was kind of surprised to realize he actually had used sort of similar phrasing before about China before the election. He does use the raping terminology a lot too. But he shifts back and forth. And it's just I think it was more shocking because he's now president and saying it's about our own country. But the line about how I'd take advantage of someone too if they didn't know, that actually has come up before, which I didn't remember. But you know what? It was true then, it's true now. And he's telling us exactly who he is.
Well, that's also, you know, his justification for all the bankruptcies and stuff. He's like, I just use the system. I mean, like, that's a selling point for him. That's his business savvy.
Right.
It's also his, like, how he views foreign relations. He thinks countries inherently try and take advantage of one another, which is probably true, but also we're trying to move beyond that and at least have the pretense of, like, yes, we are working something bigger.
National interest is a thing. Everybody wants to protect their national interest, mm-hmm. But that's...
I don't think a lot of the countries that Trump is dealing with have the similar national interests aligned with our interests.
Right.
And that's the problem, is I think he thinks that they have our interests aligned, but I don't think he gets that they're really looking out for themselves. And not really the U.S.
Well, they have no reason.
I mean, the Saudi Arabia thing, I feel like that is going to be blowing up in a really horrific way. That's terrifying. Like, I really think there's a chance here. And this, again, this is just speculation at this point. I probably shouldn't say, but like, it looks a hell of a lot like our president may have authorized the kidnapping of a foreign country's leader.
Lebanon's leader?
Yeah. But did you see that interview today?
Is his prime minister?
Yeah. Holy cow. That was, like, that dude... So basically, the Lebanese prime minister visited Saudi Arabia just before the coup happened.
Hariri.
The reverse coup. And he randomly decided to quit his job, you know? Like, right. Sorry, guys, I'm not coming back.
I'm randomly resigned.
Prime ministership. And then he was, like, not really leaving, and it was kind of appeared to be under house arrest, maybe. So obviously questions were raised. And today they had an interview with him, like, on camera. And he's like, yeah, I totally resigned on my own. But he looked nervous and terrified and scared and just exhausted. It looked exactly like an interview of someone who's forced to pretend that they're not being kidnapped.
A hostage. But can we talk about the implications of that? I mean, if you think it's the administration, horrific. Right? But why the prime minister of Lebanon? What is happening there that you think?
I know enough to know I don't know what's going on there, but it is related to Iran and Hezbollah.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of local politics involved, but basically they are trying to ramp up this proxy war into a real one.
Do you know more about it, Siraj? Like kind of like what the politics are in the background here?
I mean, obviously Iran and Saudi are fighting for hegemony in the region, and you know everything that's happened where there was like a Shia uprising within Saudi. You know, the Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr, he was executed last year in the beginning of 2016. You know, Shiite cleric who kind of staged somewhat of an uprising in the eastern part of the country. That really did not sit well with Iran. And I know that with Mohammed bin Salman, who's 32 or 34 years old, kind of raising through the ranks so quickly. You know, he was the defense minister when Saudi basically led that coalition against Yemen, against the Houthi rebels who were backed by Iran. I mean, like, yes, I agree in the sense that Saudi's trying to escalate things more. So that with Iran to make whatever proxy war they have into a real one.
Who do you think is going to fight this war? Is it going to be Israel and Iran? Like, who do you think is actually going to be on the ground? Are our troops going to show up? Saudi doesn't have a standing army. What's going to happen here? What do they want to happen?
It won't be Israel. It won't be Israel. It would most likely be Saudi planes versus Iranian planes. I don't know if Saudi would actually have boots on the ground.
They don't have
them. I know there's probably going to be a lot of bombing. Unfortunately, that's where you get more civilian casualties, and that's what I think both sides want, and that's probably going to be the worst thing that comes out of it.
And again, why is Trump and Kushner seem to be greenlighting all of this and cheering it on? Like, what is our... This is not an American interest. I don't know what their game is. Like, this is not... I really don't think whatever they're doing here is an American interest they're pushing.
Well, I think part of it is this. I mean, I could be wrong, but it could be as petty as... Obama was instrumental to reaching a deal with Iran. I want to destroy everything Obama touched. And so I'm going to make sure. I mean, like, you know, he is like obsessed with completely dismantling any kind of, you know, progress that Obama made on any issue. And I think for him, he thinks Obama is like maybe loved, you know, like a really...
he loved peace.
He loved peace. He loved Iran. He was too easy on Iran. And he wants to be... The extreme opposite. He wants to be as hard as he can. He really, really wants to incite some violence
but
in Iran.
Unfortunately, that, you know, one of the things, the drawback, obviously, is war. But it's the fact that it's another foreign entanglement that the U.S. would be getting into on Trump's watch. And that's something that really is not going to sit well with his base. And you might see a further drop in his approval ratings.
I see. That's why I kind of wonder if anything was, if a deal was reached, if there was some kind of agreement here, I think it was that America would just stay out. Like, we'd let them do what they wanted to do, and we'd agree not to get involved.
It's possible.
Yeah.
So when does Trump get back? When does Trump get back from his little trip?
So Trump gets back. He'll spend 2 days in the Philippines for the ASEAN summit, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. And then he'll be...
And he loves Duterte.
Duterte, they got photos of them hanging out.
Yeah, in the Philippines. And he'll be back, because I know it's a 12-day trip. He'll be back probably on Tuesday or Wednesday.
He'll be back right in time for some more indictments.
Anyways, let's get into that.
Well, I don't know if any indictments are coming out in like the near future.
I've got fingers crossed for Flynn. Come on.
Flynn, I don't know what to think. Everything there is so strange. And part of me, I don't know. Half the time I'm like, I have an idea or I'm thinking something. I'm like, that's so crazy and insane. There's no way real life would do that. And then I'm like, it's 2017. That's not a reason to discount it. The question is, has Flynn flipped or not? There's a lot of leaks coming out that's just Flynn's not been flipped and they're trying to flip him. But at the same time, like, is that some kind of like reverse jujitsu? They're like, oh, Flynn is not flipped. He definitely is someone you should talk to and tell him not to flip. There's no wire there. I don't know.
Well, there seems to be some, you know, like, I mean, like, there's Flynn details screwed. About... Well, yeah. And the details, it's not a Russia thing. It's a Turkey thing. And can you tell us a little bit about what the details of this really kind of crazy, almost out of a movie?
You know, next week I'll do a full episode on this maybe because it's a crazy story from start to beginning.
It's a great story.
we still know everything, but like, basically Flynn is, I mean, I knew he was on the hook for bribery. Like, that's in black and white, and like FARA violations. Dude might be on the hook for kidnapping. That's a state level offense. So good luck pardoning that one, Trump.
To kidnap, yeah. Yep.
To kidnap Gulen.
Yeah.
Yep.
And if it's not kidnapping, then it's just merely taking millions of dollars from a foreign nation to arrange for favorable extradition of someone that Turkey didn't like.
Yeah, so it's either that. Quid pro quo, or it's $15 million for kidnapping. It's one or the other, yeah. It seems like. But there seems like there's enough there, and there's also enough.
Oh, there's enough. That's the thing. I feel like that's why I keep wondering if Flynn really has already flipped, because they have enough. It's bigger than, they haven't charged him yet. Manafort.
Yeah.
Like, there's no good reason I can think of why they haven't charged him, unless he's either holding out for a pardon or he already has flipped. And his dumbass son keeps tweeting about stuff, like insulting. Oh my God. Like, I was giggling too, but then I'm like, oh my God, you idiot. Stop talking.
Oh, what did he tweet? I missed it.
Oh, he just tweets attacks on Mueller. And like, so like on the one hand, no one who has a deal would tweet that. On the other hand, what if they were like, look, Mueller, we're sorry, but for anyone to possibly believe that Flynn Jr. has not flipped, he's going to have to keep attacking you on Twitter. So we're going to need authorization for him to attack the prosecutor in this case. But he doesn't mean it, I swear to God.
Honestly, anything's possible at this point.
Yeah, I imagine that if Flynn Jr. Is like indicted, I imagine one of his defenses would be to say that's political based on his rantings on Twitter. And basically be
like, that's interesting.
Oh, look, I've been I've been criticizing Mueller and Comey, and now they're attacking me for my speech.
But he also helped to arrange a kidnapping.
No, I know that, but I'm just telling you that would be like the go-to defense if you were indicted.
Well, that'll be
that is the kind of clever defense he'd come up with.
Absolutely.
But you know, if Mueller was building, if he was trying to build pressure on Flynn Senior, I would guess the indictment for Junior would come first. And that might be, but you know, let's see how this unfolds. But in the meantime, I think poor little Paige is still talking. Carter Paige, he keeps popping up. This poor guy.
Oh my God! Somehow, in all the things that happens, we've forgotten the most. Probably, if I had to do like a most batshit list, I think this gets number one, and that's the transcript of his interview.
Was it with Jake Tapper or Chris Hayes?
No. Before this was a Senate hearing.
Senate hearing.
Oh yeah. I forgot about that.
Someone needs to make this into like a script for like a TV show. You don't have to even change it that much.
No. Get some good actors. Like when Tina Fey was playing Sarah Palin without changing a word. I mean, it's the same thing. We just need somebody to do a live. Maybe Suraj, you can do it. Just a live reading of like this transcript. It's crazy. I feel like there's a competency issue here. Like, something is wrong with this guy.
But that's the thing. Like, you're like, okay, obviously something's not right here. It's insane and it's impossible to be true. Maybe it's a double play. Maybe they're just pretending to be insane. I don't even know. Like, nothing
maybe
I can think
really
of actually makes sense
of this. Attention.
Maybe he's a broken person, and that's kind of the person that Trump hires.
Maybe he really wants to
and
go to
Russia uses a stooge.
Maybe he really, really wants to go to prison, and Mueller's just not paying attention to him. I don't know what's going on.
So we're probably out of time now, but that transcript is amazing for many reasons, mostly being the fact that, like, Carter Paige is, there's so many lines. He's like, they're asking why he went to Russia. He's like, oh, I just wanted to live my life.
Yes, I did see that. You can't tell me what to do, Mom.
And then poor, like, I mean, even the Republican senators were, like, losing their stuff. They're, like, Gowdy was not playing games. Like, he had more than... Gowdy's usually playing defense attorney in these transcripts for, like, the Russia witnesses.
Oh, God. Poor guy.
Gowdy had no more fucks to give for Carter Paige.
So funny.
At one point, Carter Paige is like, there was this dark cloud over me. And Gowdy's like, don't care about dark clouds. What'd you say to Russia?
Just keeping him on track was nearly impossible. I mean, the entire time. He just was all over the place. It was crazy. And I would love to say, you know what, maybe if we have a little bit of a slower news week, we can actually discuss it more in detail next week. But I don't think it's going to happen because Trump is returning.
If we get a chance, I mean, if things are miraculously quiet, we should, because there's a lot more in there to discuss. And maybe I'll build into more stuff in the Russia investigation, which is still ongoing.
Yeah.
Here's what we know from Carter Paige. From that transcript and the documents being cited in it, there is a shit ton more we've not seen yet. It's going to come out. Like, big stuff that is just waiting. It's not been mentioned yet in the pleadings, but they were reading off of emails. They clearly have, and clearly have been reading for a while now, that show some really important things about where this is headed.
Sounds good. All right, anything else you guys want to touch on? Or are we ready to wrap up?
Only the one last thing is that the Trump administration appointed a 36-year-old judge, a nominee for a federal judge.
A blogger.
Disqualified.
And he's winning the approval of the Senate panel. He's never tried a case. And he's a blogger. And
I'm 100 times more qualified than him for a federal judgeship. And I'm completely unqualified in every measure.
Yeah, Brett Talley is his name. You can look him up. He's a basically his nominee to be a federal judge. And of all places, Alabama. So,
thank God for Alabama. Makes Georgia look more or less normal.
I encourage all our listeners to look up Brett Talley. And, you know, make up your mind on him. I don't think it's rather concerning that they're going to such lengths to find these people when they could really find a lot more qualified people.
What do you think is happening there, Suraj? Why do you think they're doing this?
There's a lack of people that they can try to fill these posts. And so
lack of people who are as ideologically reprehensible or completely unqualified. I mean, like,
they blocked a shit ton of appointments. So, like, basically they blocked tons and tons of appointments Obama would have made in normal circumstances. So there's a lot of, like, spaces to fill there. And
a lot of it is, honestly, the establishment working against the Trump administration to block as many nominees as possible. I mean, that's the reason why I like people like David Clark, who was a Trump, you know, Sheriff David Clark from Milwaukee, who let people die in his prisons. I mean, he was blocked from getting into DHS. And Sebastian Gorka, who, you know,
speaking of which, if you guys ever want to interview David Clark, I just found out a friend of mine is now working with him very closely. No. I'm not even kidding. I was like, tell me this is not happening. She's like, oh, no, now I'm working with him closely. But I'm, anyway, very, 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 very
fun.
Yeah. But she was trying to convince me that he's not as bad as we all think. So I don't know.
Oh, and there was one last thing we missed before we started recording. We were going to discuss the Keurig machines and how they exploded, but that might do it until next week.
The Keurig machines.
So because of Keurig pulling their ads from Sean Hannity's show, because of his interview with Roy Moore.
Friday. I think it was before that. I think it was his initial comments when he was like defending 14-year-olds consenting to sex.
I think it was because of the interview. I think the interview kind of really showed that he was defending this guy.
Yeah, I think it was after the interview is when people were putting pressure on them.
Yeah, and so Keurig pulled their advertising from his show. And so a lot of Hannity and I guess Trump supporters are pulling
out. Right.
They're smashing their Keurigs, and I know Susan, you're telling me that, you know, people should be smashing their Keurigs just because the coffee isn't good.
I mean, I'll just smash them, but like, I mean, if you already bought it, clearly you like what it is. And much as I appreciate the videos of amazing like things being thrown off like four floor balconies and smashing on the sidewalk, I was very entertained. It seems like kind of counterproductive.
Yeah, and not to mention the fact that I've seen people like post videos from like inside their living room, you know, smashing their Keurigs. Like, oh, good, now you got to clean it up.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. I, you know what? If somebody has one they want to smash, please send it to me. Just let me know because I don't have one. I really want them to like come up with a Keurig for chai, and I mean real chai, not like the fake stuff.
I might use that.
Yeah.
I was just about to tell you they do have chai Keurig, but
no, it's not the
probably not the one. Your taste is probably a little bit more sophisticated and snooty.
You know, if
it's strawberry and all things chai.
If they call it chai tea, it's not real. That's not even a thing. Okay, chai tea is not a thing. It's just chai. Simple as that. All right, guys. Well, we're gonna wrap up this week. Thanks so much for listening, and we will be back in 7 days. Thanks, guys. Have a good week. Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. thefeedback.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345. And you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.